Yeah, I'm Jimmy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jimmy.
And my friend Greg from Smyrna, Delaware.
Indeed.
My best friend. Wow. First of all, I'd like to thank the people that asked me to come share today. The guy that was supposed to share this morning, Fred Y., from San Antonio, had recently had surgery on his eye. And he had a bubble in his eye. And he was waiting to see if he could come. And it turned out that he couldn't. So a couple weeks ago, Fred called me and said that if it turned out that he couldn't come, would I be willing to fill in for him? And that's usually how it goes. I'm usually not the first choice, but I'm around, so they use me, and that's okay, you know? I just moved back to the East Coast 17 months ago. I live in Smyrna, Delaware. My home group is No More Excuses. We meet on Sunday at 5:30, and it's a flat book study. Right, Rose? So we give the home group a plug. If you don't believe your home group is the best home group in the world, you probably need another home group. All right? So, you know, and Fred called me this morning to wish me, just tell me that he was praying for me, to wish me good luck and everything and how it goes. And he said, and I told him, I said, well, maybe you'll be okay next year to come. So I told him, it's raining up here, maybe we'll take a rain check. You know, my topic this morning, he told me about, I mean, I forgot our conversation, to tell you the truth, and about a week ago, he called me, and we were talking, and he said he didn't know if he was going to be able to come, and he finally called me Wednesday and told me he wasn't going to be able to come. So I put a little thought into it, but it really doesn't require a whole lot of thought. I've been clean since March 3rd, 1992, and, well, yeah. That's the good part. The other half of that story is it took me 7 years to put 5 days together. We were talking about that earlier. So there's always two sides to the story. But so, you know, my friend is back there, Barry. And he dubbed me back in those days the man who refused to stop using. And but they never gave up on me. And that's the thing about Narcotics Anonymous. We don't give up. We don't shoot our wounded. And it's a good thing, you know. Some people, believe it or not, I mean, come in here and pick up one white key tag, and that's it, you know, and that's good. And then some people, I always say I had a shoebox full of them things. I lived with my mother up in Maple Shade, New Jersey, and I had a bunch of white ones. I had a few bogus red ones. Hey. And one time I went to Texas, and I came back to the meeting, and Barry said to me, where you been? And I said, oh, I was down in Texas. And he goes, man, you've been clean. I couldn't tell nobody that I couldn't stay clean. That was my main problem for all those years. I couldn't say, I don't know how to stay clean. Can you help me? He almost killed me. So I said, well, yeah, I've been clean. He said, well, you must have 6 months. So I felt compelled to get up and get a bogus 6 month detail. So if you're doing that and you know the pain that feels like, you don't have to do that. You can get with somebody after the meeting and say, hey, I don't know how to stay clean, you know? And that's really about, you know, to lead us to what I'm talking about this morning is why me and what can I do? You know, the two sides of this thing. I mean, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know, you know, that program worked better if I stopped doing drugs, you know? That I could actually put together some clean time. I was under the mistaken idea that, you know, I should know how to stay clean. I know that sounds insane, but that was the insanity of my disease. I came in here and I thought, well, you know, I'm 30-something years old, 31 years old, I think I was at the first time, and I should know how to do this. I'm a reasonably smart guy. I work as an electrician. I've got some skills and stuff like that. I should know how to do this. And I'd read the book, and then I'd be inspired, and then I'd go use, you know? And then I'm telling you, and I'd go to that meeting, and it was an hour and a half meeting, I believe, and I would leave there, and I tell the story a lot, and these people would take me to the diner, I never had no money. They buy me a cinema bun, a cup of coffee, and they say, how'd you like to meet me? I said, oh, it's great. I said, do you understand? I'd like. And I said, yeah. And then they dropped me off, and I'd strong arm my mom for the car keys and $20, and I'd be over in Philly at 10:30 at night scoring after just left the meeting. That was the insanity of my using. So, and I used to think, you know, how come I can't get it? You know what I mean? And before that, you know, I was thinking all kind of crazy stuff, you know? And then once I was around for a while and I found out, you know, we learn a little something going to meetings, you know, we hear things. They used to hand me, why are we here? It's laying right here. I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, golly, man. You know, I remember they hand me that and I couldn't get through it. I would cry. I would break up. Because when it says we placed our use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, our husbands, our children, I was the guy that you couldn't get, you know, I had kids. You know, when I first came around, you know, I had a kid. He was born in 1984. Yesterday, April 21st, 1984, my son. And, you know, my daughter was born in May of 85, but I was the guy that you couldn't give $10 to go buy Pampers. So I wouldn't come back. There wasn't no Pampers. There was a long excuse of what happened, you know. Some more lies, more craziness, you know. So I guess I tell you that, I don't know what I'm saying half the time. I just talk a lot about Narcotics Anonymous. I love Narcotics Anonymous, but I tell you those things so that you're not thinking, if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous and you're sitting out there, don't do like I do. I used to sit back there, Greg, and I'd think, well, he didn't use like I used, you know. He wasn't as bad as me. Yeah, I was, okay? You know, I was junkie fireman for 3.5 years, driving the back of the hook and ladder in Camden, New Jersey. I was, you know, downward spiral. I was shoplifter in all the Wild Wilds and Heritage stores in South Jersey, you know. I was stealing cigarettes and all that shit. I worked my way down to where I finally ended up on the balls of my ass at the Sunday Breakfast Mission up in Wilmington, Delaware, and I was running from the cops. That's why I wasn't in Camden. I was trying to get to Texas, and when I finally got to Texas, I didn't want to get clean. I just playing it out. And what happened was God intervened, I suppose, and put just the right people in my life to tell me just the right things that I needed to hear, you know? So when I started getting clean, this why me thing, I used to think, I didn't want to be an addict. I didn't. I wanted you to tell me, I wanted to be normal, you know? And I used to think, my sister's normal. My brother's normal. He works at the nuclear plant over there, right? He's been there 40 years. You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, he's normal, right? Got the big house over in South Jersey, your wife, your kid, you know, too much debt, you know, normal guy, right? And I thought, wow, you know, how come I'm not like that, you know? And he used to question. And then what happens to us is we get past that, you know? We get past that. And then we come to some level of acceptance that, okay, I got this disease, and, you know? And, of course, we got to do all the research, you know? Well, I might have the gene, and there's countless other things that just contributing factors as to the reason that I'm so goddamn crazy. But when it gets right down to it, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. And I come to learn in Narcotics Anonymous, it doesn't really matter. It's of no consequence how I got the disease, right? You know, I got my book. I got this old book. It's my antique book that I carried for many years, and I had to retire it because it was falling apart. And recently, I put a cover on it, and it's a... And on page 15, we talk about page 15 a lot around circles that I run in. And, you know, it talks about we came to our first meeting, didn't know what to expect and all that. And we began to feel that people cared, I'm paraphrasing, and were willing to help. But then down the bottom it says, we face three disturbing realizations, and the first one is we're powerless over our addiction and our lives are unmanageable. And two, although we're not responsible for our disease, we are responsible for our recovery. And probably the most disturbing of all is the third one that says we can no longer blame people, places, and things for our addiction. We must face our problems and our feelings, you know? And that's it right there. We begin to digest that information, internalize it, and then we can move past, why are we here? Now we're into what do I do? Well, we got a whole chapter on that, so that's pretty easy. You know, you open the book and it says, what can I do? Right? We hang around with people, you know, and we see what they're doing. This book says, our only hope is to live by the example of those who have faced our dilemma and found a way out, right? So I can find me some really bad examples. You know who they are. Or I can gravitate. No, I mean, it's exciting. Come on, we do it. We do it. Or I can find some good examples and follow them, you know? And to tell you the truth, you know, I had some real good examples, you know? I'll tell you, man, when I got clean, we talked about it. Right? Kenny C, who just died, we used to talk about, we hit this sweet spot in Narcotics Anonymous, 1990, 92. It wasn't a very big. Well, you know, I remember, you know, going to a world convention that was about the size of this, and, you know, that didn't seem to be a whole lot of people. And there was, but it wasn't like it is now. And I found this bunch of people in Houston, Texas, right? I was telling some guys before the meeting. Where I got clean, I walked into this place, my friends sent me there. They thought it would be a good idea if I took a break. They looked at me when I got off the Greyhound bus. I was 135 pounds, and I had a big golf ball-sized abscess where this hole in my arm is now. And I was sick, and I was dying. You know, I didn't know what to do. I'm twice the man I was when I got clean. I say that now. About 270 now, so. They told me if I didn't use, I'd become an old fat white guy. Here I am. Yeah, Greg just reminded me. I put down the spoon and picked up the fork. That's my story. But you're laughing because you do it, right? Yeah. That's right. So we do all that. We trade off addictions for a little while until we realize none of those work to make us feel any better either, you know? And we keep doing. We never really, really get a handle on that. It seems like I don't, you know? I can still go to the casino too much. I can work too much. I can become worshiper of the great dollar. I can do all sorts of crazy things. Clean. I've done it, you know? I like to get honest when I'm up here, and you know what? I was 15 years clean. You know the story, right? I was 15 years clean. I had moved to California on a deal for work, you know? And I was out there for a year, and I got stuck in the card room in California. So they give me money up in Fresno to go to Bakersfield for the week. I'd spend it all the first night. I'm talking about clean now, 15 years clean. Right? And I'm sleeping in my service truck on I-5 in the service area. And my disease had me right where it wanted me. It couldn't tell nobody. Once again, how would it look? You know what I mean? How would it look if I walked into the meeting and said, oh, you know what? I couldn't tell nobody again. So when I finally got to the point where my girlfriend went back to Texas, she had enough of that, right? So we packed her off, stayed a couple months, and then I finally I don't know how I get off on these things, but finally one Monday morning, I was feeling so bad, but I'd been clean a long time, and I knew that using wasn't the solution. You with me? And I don't know what else, I don't know how else to change the way I feel about me and the piece of shit that I'm feeling like that morning. So I called my sponsor over in Houston. What a novel idea, right? And he said, my sponsor is the most loving, caring individual I've ever met in my whole life. Phil Y from Houston, Texas. And he said, "That's okay, man. Just give on, you know, just sell that stuff and come on back. You'll be okay." Right? Sounded just too simple, right? But I did it, and I came back, and he said, "Come back and be with the people that you got clean with. Get grounded again." That was his exact words. So, see, and that's the kind of stuff that's million-dollar stuff for Narcotics Anonymous. It's gold, baby. You know, when you're in that position and somebody, another person can tell you that and you feel okay, you feel enough to sell all that stuff. I had Crazy Jimmy's Everything Must Go sale, the yard sale. I sold everything and packed up the rest of it in my truck, threw the motorcycle on the back of the truck, and I drove back to Houston, Texas. And that was 10 years ago. And then I reapply myself to the steps. I reapply myself to not being so damn crazy, right? So that's what I do. That's the what can I do with this. If you're new, right, and I read over what can I do last night a little bit, you know, and because I like to, you know, give out good information here in Narcotics Anonymous, stop using, man. Yeah? It says the first step to recovery is to stop using drugs, right? That little thought right there escaped me for a long time and kept me, you know, I was kicking bottoms out of bottoms, right? I could have stopped when I still had the wife and two kids, right? But I didn't. I could have stopped when I was on the fire department, had a lifetime job, but I didn't. I could have stopped when I worked for one of them 10 Fortune 500 companies that I worked for. I've had more jobs than you can imagine, but I didn't. Right? I didn't stop until I was mission man, bum, you know, with a fan belt telling some story on the corner in Houston, Texas. You know, I need $3.47. Right? We came down here from Waco, standing outside the VA hospital talking about, we came down here from Waco to see my friend. He's a veteran. He's in the VA hospital. You know, it's a good story, right? Right? It's what we do, right? It's what we do. So, when I come in here, we were talking this morning, which I have a lot of fun in Narcotics Anonymous, I really do. And I was talking to a couple of guys, what I call characters. They were sitting down here by the window this morning. And so I was fooling with them. I said, "This is where all the characters hang out." And they said, "Well, yeah, you must be one." I said, "Well, I am, right? That's, you know, it takes one to know one, right, Barry?" Right? So I was telling them, I said, "Look, you know, we were talking about how I used to go to corners in Philly where nobody knew me and try to score, go to the spot. You know, that's what they call the spot, right? I go to the spot, and I didn't have any reservations about going there and doing what I had to do, telling them what I was about, right? Showing them my ID, you know? All that, right? You know what I'm saying? So why I come in the meeting and I can't tell anybody where I'm at? You know, that's the problem, right? All of a sudden I'm, you know, my head hang down, you know, feeling all bad about myself, can't get the help I need, feeling like I'm all alone in the middle of a meeting. I don't have to do that. I can reach out. What can I do? I can reach out and get the help I need, you know? It says Narcotics Anonymous is a fellowship of survival. And one of its chief main advantages, I don't know the exact word it says, main advantages is it places us in intimate, regular contact with the very people who can best understand and help us. That's the hit right there, right? That's what I'm talking about, right? You know what I mean? You may not, oh, I was telling you about Houston, Texas. You may not look like me, right? You may come from a different background. You may, there might be something about you that's different. That's what I was starting to tell you about Houston, Texas. When I landed there, I was telling these old character guys. When I landed in Houston, Texas, there's an old apartment complex, and there was about 100 guys there, anywhere from 90 to 105, 110 guys, depending on the weather. And there was a couple, what I call counselor wannabes, they were getting their hours in, you know, and it was a cool place. It was the best place on the planet for me. I got clean there. It's not an endorsement of this place. I'm just telling you how it was. But when I walked into that meeting, I walked in, there was a sea of black faces, right? Now, I tell you this story because I looked at them, and they were trying to help me, and they came up and gave me these hugs. I told you this story before. And they gave me a hug, right? And they said, "The war is over. You lost." I said, "What?" Right? "The war is over. You lost. Time to surrender," right? And I thought, they were saying all kind of stuff, man. They were saying they loved me, right? They were giving me these hugs, these warm, fuzzy hugs, right? I said, "What the hell is going on here," right? Because my thinking was so crazy, right? And they called me Jim. And my name is Jimmy. But we got 5 minutes. So, but they were talking about the guy from Taxi with the hair all over his head, the crazy guy. And I was talking crazy and looking crazy, and I didn't know what the hell was going on. So, but what happened was my mind told me, they like to smoke a lot of crack in 1992 in Houston, Texas, all right? And so my mind said, well, there were 60 people in the meeting. These are 60 black crack addicts from Houston, Texas. They can't possibly help me because I'm a white heroin addict from Philadelphia. You with me, right? So, you know, when I move past those things and I find out that the information that people are giving me, and then they brought Frank in. He was a black heroin addict from Houston, Texas. And we used to sit after the meeting and talk, you know, the little meeting there. And you know what I found out? He was telling the same story I was feeling. He was talking about the same feelings, fears, insecurities, all of it, just like me, right? And I began to identify, like Jimmy Kay says, at the level of feelings and emotions, where I could begin to get the empathy, that healing factor that Jimmy talked about, right? I found a flock, right? You know, that's what happened. You know, I found my people. They didn't look like me. They was me, right? And you know what? I began to recover. I began to go to outside meetings. I got the book. I found a sponsor. You know? I found a sponsor who was involved in the program of Narcotics Anonymous, could take me through the steps, and I began to recover. You know? I'm not recovered, but I'm in recovery today, right? You know what I'm saying? I haven't deluded myself into thinking that there's another way. That's the big thing in my life. A lot of my friends have decided maybe I don't need Narcotics Anonymous anymore. Not me. You know? Uh-uh. I got to keep coming. I got to keep doing this thing. If you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, it's pretty simple. You put the drugs down. You leave them there. You ask for help. You get the literature. You come. And you'll be okay. You know? I'm pretty... should I tell? Yeah. In closing, I got this thing, right? I brought it to Delaware with me. And I say, hey, you know what happened to me, Bear? Guess what happened? I stopped doing drugs. My life got better. Right? Thank you for letting me share with you.